Spooky Lab.
Hi, and welcome to Cookie Lab. I'm Jill.
And I'm Chris. And Jill.
Hi, Chris. Yes?
Why is tonight's cookie unlike other night's cookies?
Is it a Passover cookie?
It is. And
for those of you who might not know, that the way Chris asked that question is a special way that we ask questions during Passover.
Yes, it's one of the most important questions, and leads into, it's part of the Passover Seder. It is a meal through which we tell the history of the Jews escaping Egyptian bondage.
When they were enslaved by the Pharaoh thousands of years ago.
Yes. And
we can't have leavened things because there wasn't enough time for the fleeing slaves to let their cookies rise.
So here is a paradox that I have always struggled with during the Passover time. And that is, we clean our house of all of the bread products.
That's right.
We get rid of all the crumbs.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not allowed to cook or bake with flour and many other grains and legumes.
Mm-hmm.
However, we eat matzah.
Which has flour.
Which is made with flour.
Yeah.
Please discuss amongst yourselves.
Oh, I mean,
this
please.
Paradox.
No, the whole thing. I mean, any kind of religious food thing, like, doesn't really make sense in modern times, right? So,
being celiac, here's the other paradox.
Are you like, this is awesome. Now, not only am I not eating flour, no one else is either.
Well, I do take great pleasure in the suffering of others during this holiday.
And at all times.
And yes. I bring pleasure through cookies, one cookie at a time. Oh, there's another tagline for us. Bringing pleasure, one cookie at a time. Pleasing the world, one cookie.
You can just add that
time.
To anything, you know, that's like a party game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What are you doing this weekend?
I'm bringing pleasure, one cookie at a time.
I'm cleaning out my garage, one cookie at a time.
That would work, too. So, where was I before we had this?
Well, you said as a celiac person.
Oh, yes, right. So, as a celiac person, I cannot eat the matzah.
Well, they have gluten-free matzah.
And they have gluten-free matzah, which is not kosher for the Passover.
Oh, is that true?
It is.
Why not?
Because it's made with rice flour, and rice isn't kosher for Passover.
I am shocked by this. I have many boxes of that stuff. We use it every year because we have multiple celiac people in our family.
It just doesn't say kosher for Passover on it.
Whoa.
So, my question really is, you know, why can we use the flour for the matzah and not for anything else, as long as we're not allowing it to be leavened? And here's the answer. The Torah, the religious book of the Jewish people, states that you can only eat unleavened products. And there's also rules that have come along that says anything can only be cooked for 18 minutes.
Okay.
And so that's, all matzah is only cooked for 18 minutes.
Okay.
There are very few other things that you could make that can only be cooked for 18 minutes. Cookies are among all of them.
Yeah.
You can only still use the flour for the matzah. And you're not supposed to bake it at your house, because then you would get grain all over your house. So there are only certain places.
So this sounds like a scam. Like the Manischewitz people got together with whoever wrote the Torah 2,000 years ago, or however long ago it was. And they were like, all right, we'll partner with you, but this is what you have
but
to say.
But it's really to keep the Jewish people together during diasporas.
Why?
Because if they want to keep the Passover traditions, they need to be near some place that can do all these things for them.
Can bake the matzah
in
their commercial approved ovens.
Yeah. And the other grains have come down through time as being something you can't use because people started making flours out of the grains.
Mm-hmm.
And you could cook with those, and you could make breads, and you could make things that were not wheat.
And somebody came along and said, no, this is going to destroy our people because we'll be too
chickpea flour
spread out.
Well, they're like, you're trying to circumvent the rules. So let's not have any other grains that could be made into a bread. And mustard falls in there somehow as well.
Oh my goodness.
No mustard cookies for you today, Jill.
That is disappointing. The mayonnaise cookie was so good. I was hoping you made a mustard cookie.
That's after Passover. Okay. But let me tell you that the good Lord above, whoever you may think of as the guiding principle of religion, did not outlaw chocolate.
Right. No, that's totally fine.
Chocolate is fine. Mm. You can't bake a bread just out of chocolate powder.
No? Are you sure?
I tried.
You tried? Okay.
Yeah. So, today's cookie is a fudgy Passover cookie.
Yum.
It is flourless.
Okay.
It is full of chocolate in many forms.
Yum.
And it is a disaster.
Oh, no. I feel like do you remember when the flourless chocolate cake hit? Like, I don't remember when it was specifically.
Oh, I love a flourless chocolate cake.
The 80s or something like that? When it became like everybody has it on their menu, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's delicious. It's like a chocolate bar.
What went wrong? Your cookies. Okay. I'm looking at a plate of cookies and there is a flat kind of amoeba looking one. Mm-hmm. And then a more cookie, traditional round looking one. They both have crackles. They both are shiny.
Yes.
I predict they will both be delicious.
So it looks like it's supposed to look like a crinkle cookie without the powdered sugar.
Yes. So the round shaped one does look sort of like that.
Well, today was a true experiment in the lab.
As always. Yeah.
We have two totally different bases for our cookies.
Okay.
One cookie is made with potato starch.
Okay.
A common substitute in baking and cooking during Passover.
Sure. And in sweets when you are in Maine.
Really?
Yeah. They have a special candy called a Needham that is made with
potato starch. Oh, okay. As we talk about the science, I have an inspiration for a new treat.
Okay. But you're getting ahead of yourself.
I get ahead of myself.
Yeah, it happens.
So one of the cookies is made with potato starch, and one cookie is made with confection sugar. No potato starch, no starches other than the sugar whatsoever.
Interesting.
Which cookie do you think is which?
The spready one is the confectioner sugar one.
And the puffy one that looks more like cookie-like is the potato starch one.
That's my guess.
That is exactly the opposite.
Okay. Well, I know granulated sugar makes the cookie spread, but maybe confectioner sugar doesn't.
Oh, okay. So I should have said that one is a mixture of potato starch, granulated sugar, brown sugar, and one is just confectioner sugar.
Okay. I might have changed my answer, but why don't you tell me more.
So I found the recipe, which looked perfectly good and perfectly doable on soulandstreusel.com.
Okay.
And they had a lovely looking fudgy chocolate Passover cookie, and it did exactly what I said. You take brown sugar, white sugar, you combine them, you take two eggs, mix it in with that dry ingredients, add potato starch, some salt, and then melted chocolate, a little bit of brewed coffee.
Oh.
And chocolate chips. So I baked this.
Did you melt the chocolate chips?
No, you just add the chocolate chips.
So there's like chocolate chips in the cookie?
Yeah, and there's melted chocolate as well. So, made this cookie. It was not a dough. It was a batter. Mm. It was like cake batter.
Mm.
So I
really loose.
Used a tablespoon and I poured a tablespoon out. And it spread immediately.
Okay.
And I baked it for 7 minutes. It said 7 to 8 minutes.
Okay.
I put it on parchment paper because it said to. And it came out looking exactly like it's looking today and looked in the picture on our Facebook page.
Flat and irregular.
Yes. And
I still want to eat it.
It completely stuck to the paper.
Oh.
I could take the parchment paper and turn it upside down and shake it over my head.
Is that what you did?
It wasn't coming off. It did not say to grease the parchment paper, which I think is the mistake.
I don't know if I've ever heard
of
greasing
the parchment
paper.
Yes, for the second version that I made, I had to grease the parchment paper.
Then why didn't you just grease the pan? Like, what's the point?
Yeah, I don't know. But let's taste it.
Okay.
And see what we think. Okay.
I'm going to break it in half.
Here we go.
It seems chewy and not regrettable. Oh, it's very chewy. It's sticky. Didn't spread apart super easily. Let's eat it.
Very flat.
It's like a brownie brittle almost, but it's not. It's
not
very
brittly.
No, it's chewy. And what would you call this?
Brownie taste.
I'm not unhappy. I'm not.
No, it's fine, but it's not.
It's a chewy, flat brownie.
Yes.
Like very flat. Uh-huh. Like an eighth of an inch
mm-hmm.
thick. It's a brownie slim.
Mm. Now, if we advertised it as that, mm-hmm. I think it would be a great success.
Mm-hmm.
It is edible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not rolling on my back with joy.
No, the presentation of it leaves a bit to be desired.
Okay. So.
So you went back to the drawing board in your lab.
I did. I was like, this is not what I signed up
this
for.
This is not Cookie Lab worthy.
Then I looked all over the internet and I found several recipes. One on thesupermomlife.com.
And you immediately subscribe.
And one on kosheronabudget.com. The only difference was that the kosheronabudget.com added a teaspoon of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I had a teaspoon of coffee in the first one. I want a teaspoon of coffee in the second one.
You do?
Yes.
Okay.
So, completely different recipes in every way.
Okay.
Except for the teaspoon of coffee.
Okay.
That is the only constant.
Oh, well, the color is exactly the same.
Color is exactly the same because I use the same cocoa powder.
Mm-hmm. And the shininess of it is also the same. Yeah. It's like brownie.
Yeah, I mean, it's got sugar.
And egg. Yeah. Some egg.
Yeah. So this one used cocoa powder and powdered sugar
mm-hmm.
as the dry ingredient.
That's it.
A little bit of salt.
Mm-hmm.
Two large egg whites.
Mm. This makes it shiny.
Makes it shiny, but it also, as we know, egg whites.
It's a protein scaffold.
Protein scaffold. Got the.
So it's not flat anymore.
Get a big scaffold in there. No baking soda, no baking powder at all. Look how puffy it is.
How come it rose like that?
That's the power of the egg whites.
So what was in the first one in terms of eggs? Nothing?
Two eggs.
Whole eggs.
Whole eggs.
Okay.
And potato starch.
Okay.
And then 3/4 cup of mini chocolate chips. The other one had whole chocolate chips and melted chocolate.
But when I ate the other one, I did not come upon a whole chocolate chip. Mm. Did it all melt in the oven?
It must have, yeah.
This one has some lumps in it that leads me to believe I'm going to get a chip.
Let's find out.
Okay.
Does it break differently?
Yes, I think it was slightly easier to break. It's a little more crumbly.
Okay. This has a nice little crunch.
It has a meringue-like.
But it has a crunch.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like a stiff, like a very tiny stiffness that you break through immediately, but.
Tastes different.
Slightly different flavor.
It's like a light.
The flavor of the other one better?
Yeah, this is like a lighter chocolate, more sugary.
There is nothing at all wrong with this cookie.
Yeah, it's a happy cookie.
You could present this if you were invited to someone's home for a Seder.
Or anytime.
Mm-hmm.
I got a chocolate chip. These are mini chocolate chips.
Okay. Very sweet.
Very sweet.
I'm glad I have this coffee with me.
This took twice as long to bake.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
What have we learned?
My gosh.
Chris is opening his iPad.
The science to this.
He's going to have reams of notes for us.
I could go on for a 2-hour lesson.
Let's do it.
On cookies.
You guys good on your commute? You've got more time for Cookie Lab today?
In each recipe, we are working with sugars. But one is in the form of confectioner sugar, which is just a finely processed white granulated sugar.
10 times finer.
10 times finer. And in the other case, we're adding potato starch. And one would think that potato starch would be a good substitute for
flour. Yeah,
exactly.
That did not happen.
No, because potato starch is completely different
Mm-hmm. That's not super surprising. I mean, a potato is a vegetable that grows under the ground, and the wheat is leaves that grow up to the sun.
Oh, yeah. That is true. And what you make flour out of is a tiny little grain.
Like a nugget at the tippy top.
It's like a tiny potato.
But even tiny potatoes are made of potato.
Yeah, there's no relationship. They both have starch in them.
But it's just different.
There's wheat starch and there's potato starch.
Yeah.
Both are polysaccharides. They are long chains of carbohydrates.
Oh, well then why like is sugar, it behaving so differently?
Right. That occurs. All plants have starch in them. All starches consist of amylose and or amylopectin, which are large carbohydrate units of glucose molecules. They're all made up of that.
Okay. You just tweak one molecule or something and it's completely
the percentages
different
of one or the other.
Okay.
So amylose takes the form of a relatively straight chain.
Okay.
Amylopectin is highly branched.
Okay.
It's larger. It raises the viscosity of liquids that you mix it in.
That makes sense. I mean, if it's got all those tendrils, it's going to be...
It's going to make protein
some drag
meshes. Yeah. Right? The trade-off is that the resulting, let's call it a gel...
Okay.
...doesn't have as much strength as is made when the straight
the long
chains
strands okay
mix together.
Okay. Interesting.
Starches, if we look at them under a microscope, they would look like crystal granules.
Cool.
We've described them sometimes before as mixed up bracelets.
Yes.
Proteins.
Like
proteins.
Jumbled, tangled beads on a string.
If you expose them to enough heat and moisture, the crystal granules swell, soften, they lose their hard structure, and this is a process known as gelatinization.
Mm.
And the starch granules eventually burst.
Oh.
Very exciting. They leach starch molecules out into the water that surrounds them, and it thickens the mixture. So if that same mixture is cooled, the mixture generally becomes even thicker, kind of rubbery. Mm. At the extreme. Think of...
You don't want a rubbery
gravy.
Cookie.
Think of gravy.
Okay.
When you make your gravy during Thanksgiving.
It's delicious.
Delicious. The next
then
day you take it out of the
gelatinous
fridge.
Gelatinous.
Right. Exactly. That's what happens.
Kind of gross looking.
If you heat it, reheat it, it doesn't become just as nice as it did that night.
No, even if you whisk it real good.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get something
get
like
close,
that, but it's not going to be exactly the same.
Okay.
Let's talk specifically about potato starch now.
Yes, let's.
You get it by crushing potatoes, which releases free starch in the form of a milky liquid.
Yes.
The starch is washed out, collected, then dried to a fine white powder that is odorless and tasteless. Yum.
So useful.
And it has a slightly lower amylose content. Remember we talked
that's
about...
That's the one that's the long chain.
No, yes. Yeah. So it's got a little bit more amylopectin, a little less amylose. So it's,
I said the wrong thing then.
No. You said exactly the right thing. The long chain, they've got less of that.
Okay.
It shares a number of similarities with cornstarch, which is probably the most popular starch in the world.
Okay.
When heated in water, potato starch behaves roughly the same as cornstarch. The starch solution starts off opaque. It thickens and forms a gel. And in order to form a gel that doesn't have any clumps, potato starch, like cornstarch, has to be dispersed in cold water before heating. So you mix it up in a little bit of cold water.
Yeah.
2-to-1. And then you introduce it
I have
into
done
the
that with
heated
cornstarch,
whatever.
Yes.
And it gels. It doesn't form clumps. If you just throw that cornstarch or potato starch across the top of your mixture, it's never gonna get
mixed in.
Right. Potato starch has some advantages over cornstarch. For one thing, potato starch readily combines with water, much easier.
Okay.
Also, gels made from potato starch solution tend to be clearer, and a sauce thickened with potato starch tends to be glossier and silkier. Mm. It's actually a little better than cornstarch.
Wonder why more people don't have that, a can of potato starch in their cap, in their cupboard. Yeah.
Fun fact.
Versatile.
You can make oobleck exactly the same from potato starch as you can from cornstarch.
Okay.
It is a non-Newtonian fluid.
Mm-hmm. Slap that thing.
Potato starch does this thing called pasting.
Pasting.
Yes. And it refers to the increased viscosity of the surrounding liquid when you agitate it after it gelatinizes. So in other words, when you use the potato starch in the right proportion, gelatinized potato starch can help form a pasting dough that sticks together really nicely. And this has been tested on the website SeriousEats.com.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. They compared two doughs mixed at 80% hydration. So they kept the water the same. They kept the flour the same. They made one with all wheat flour and the other they made with 100% potato starch. And so they made a gelatin with both of those and then they added it to a regular flour mixture that you would use to make bread.
Okay.
The wheat flour dough, when they added it, it was still sticky, you know, and the potato starch dough was smooth, cohesive, and easy to handle right off the bat, almost like Play-Doh.
Oh, wow.
So it gelatinizes and sticks together nicely without being sticky, and you have to add a lot more flour.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to get a more pliable, light dough.
So do people know this? Like pizza chefs?
Professional chefs know this.
Okay. We're bringing this information to you.
There's a big thing now about making fried chicken. You know how you dredge some fried chicken?
The raw chicken in flour?
Yeah. You dredge it in a batter almost.
Okay.
If you put potato starch in that batter, it's going to adhere to the chicken a lot better. And it's going to be crispier.
So everybody should do that.
Yeah, they should. And I think that's a big thing now out in the internet world.
That's a hot topic. Yeah.
So in cookies and crackers, potato starch is supposed to improve crispiness, inhibit gluten formation in wheat flour formulations, and results in more delicate texture. But if you use too much, the baked product can end up dry and crumbly.
This was not dry and crumbly.
It's best not to exceed 30% of the total dry ingredient weight in potato starch.
It sounds like people have dialed this in.
Yeah. So this cookie with the potato starch
was a fail.
And it followed all the rules. So 2/3 cup of sugars, 4 tablespoons of cocoa powder and 2 tablespoons of potato starch.
Not a lot.
Not a lot, but enough to make it gummy and impossible for the mesh to really
do its job.
Do its thing and hold it.
Yeah.
It was much more fragile because the potato starch, remember, is made up of the long chains that have many branches.
Yeah.
So it puffed up initially on the cookie pan in the oven, but then it deflated and it couldn't hold itself.
Sad
it was too
cookie.
Fragile.
Yeah.
And it just became flat and gooey.
Mm.
Whereas the main carbohydrate in the other cookie was confectioner sugar, which apparently was light enough for the egg protein
to
make
the
a
scaffold,
mesh.
Yeah.
And hold it up.
Very, very cool. Thank you for conducting that.
What a rabbit hole
experiment
of starch science.
I have learned so much this week. Thank you so much.
Oh, you are so kind. I was so excited that somebody's doing experiments with potato starch on the internet and that I found it. And I was like, this is fascinating. And you can make your own potato starch from potatoes just by boiling them. Russet potatoes.
I definitely don't think I have time for that.
I do. And we have explored, but never made, and we have only dreamt of it, the donut known as a mochi nut.
A mochi nut? Wait a minute. What do you mean? We have never made the mochi nut.
No, I said we have never made it.
We just
have
talk
explored
about it.
The concept.
Is that coming up? Is there a mochi nut cookie in our future?
I have discovered a method for making a gluten-free deep fried mochi dessert made only of potato starches. Not rice mochi.
Then it's not even is it even mochi?
It's called mochi. Yeah.
This is completely off topic and should be saved for a future episode.
It will be coming up post Passover.
When you're allowed to eat rice again.
Sometime in May. Nope, there's no rice in this.
Oh, right. Sorry.
It's just potato.
But yes.
It is flavored with mirin, which I believe is rice wine.
I have it because of an appetizer, like a deconstructed spam sushi appetizer.
I might have to borrow some of it from you to do this. So yeah, coming up is a mochi nut with a mirin glaze in our lives.
Wow. At that time, I will probably say...
Go ahead.
Keep your paws off my cookies.
Until then, we will see you next week.
Yeah, see you
on
then.
On Cookie Lab.
Bye.
It's Cookie Lab.